Oliver Nelson, leading the Oliver Nelson Septet with his own arrangement, Stolen Moments. It's from Nelson's 1961 album, The Blues and the Abstract Truth. Freddie Hubbard on trumpet, Eric Dolphy on alto sax and flute, Nelson, of course, on tenor sax, George Barrow on baritone sax, Bill Evans on piano, Paul Chambers on bass, and Roy Haynes, one of my favorite drummers, on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And coming to you today, after a very rattling yesterday, right after the program yesterday, I had a medical appointment, and as I use a group of cab drivers, most of them are Haitian, really wonderful people, and one was supposed to pick me up yesterday, and he did, and I can tell there was something, he was agitated. And he's normally, you know, very contained man, very cool. So I said, what's wrong? He says, well, first, I don't know if I can pick you up afterwards. I have to go see about my kids. I said, is there something wrong? He said, yes, my children are in a school nearby where the shooting happened today. And I said, what shooting? Well, you know, I don't have a television. I don't watch TV. And he said, oh, there's a report. So far, there are 14 people dead. I said, you're joking. He said, no. And that's near where my children go to school. And I can't get them on the phone. I can't get their mother on the phone. And I have to go. I have to go and see what is going on with them. I said, of course. And that's how I learned about this extraordinarily violent event yesterday that unfolded in Parkland, which is not far from where I live, with a grand total of 17 people, most of them students, but also other individuals were killed, just mowed down yesterday afternoon, shortly after the program ended. It's so sad. A former student who reportedly had been expelled from a high school in well-to-do Parkland, Florida, for behavioral problems, reportedly returned to the school armed with an assault rifle and killed 17 people before he was apprehended by police. His name is Nicholas Cruz, 19 years old. He also injured more than a dozen others during the murderous rampage yesterday. The Broward Sheriff, Scott Israel, said that Cruz was arrested in an adjacent neighborhood of Coral Springs as he tried to flee. The worst mass school shooting since lone gunman Adam Lanza killed 20 children and 6 school employees at Sandy Hook Elementary School in December 2012. Yesterday's mass attack at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School raised once again the national debate about ways to stop this kind of extreme violence. But I think there's an intentional effort here at missing clues. We don't want to face the truth of it. We don't want to face the truth of this kind of violence. And we don't want to be seen all around the world as a society of very violent people. So the effort is made to put it in the context of, you know, an unusual incident, often committed by a person who's mentally ill. And so we can have some kind of cushion in explaining what I think intuitively, when we start to think about it, we can see how intuitive it is to many people in our society that this kind of behavior, this kind of violence, is also part of their constitutional rights. The society is predicated, after all, on the business of getting what you want. And how does America get what it wants? It takes it. Other societies like Japan are known for politeness, let's say. Or you may have a society known for its extreme courtesies and its welcoming of strangers. Another society would be known for its generosity. This one, the American society, is known for its violence. It is mind-boggling to me that we haven't gotten to that place yet of explaining why, from time to time, and it's happening more and more frequently, we see individuals going to the extreme of taking other people's lives in order to satisfy their rage about not getting what you want when you want it. The idea that you're operating on an old, and I have to use the word, an old racist concept, that you are, in fact, placed on this earth to rule it. You are in charge. And the entire world is subservient to you. This is exactly the mindset of our current president, who I still contend is mentally ill. And you see it reflected in how he views the world, strictly through his own eyes. But he must get what he wants. However he gets it done, he must get it. And violence, killing people in the process of getting what you want, is as acceptable as, you know, deciding to jaywalk across the street. The laws don't matter. They don't matter to you individually. So there's no reason to actually think about what you're doing, because you're functioning now on autopilot. You know, you are now, as the actor, the main actor in tremendous tragedy, you somehow convince yourself that people are forcing you to do these things. And you have to do them because, number one, it's right. It is your right. And number two, this is what you've been taught. Now, let's take a look at this situation. And we see how it doesn't stray far from that premise that I've just discussed. If you look at the killings, the mass killings that have occurred, whether in schools or elsewhere, the mass killings have been done by white men. And mass killings, or killings generally, are not the same. Black people, Latinos, people of color kill. I'm not justifying it, but I'm saying this is how I see a difference here. They kill each other. The violence is actually turned on themselves, even as they point the trigger and the gun at somebody else. It is actually self-annihilating in nature. They're not thinking about the political and sociological and psychological implications of being conditioned to value the self so poorly that it doesn't matter if they die in the process of committing these heinous crimes. So the violence, in a way, is turned, in a macabre way, turned inward. You're killing your own. When you look at the profiles of the cases that have come to national and international attention in terms of the sheer inordinate number of killings that are done by white men, you see an entirely different underlining pattern of thought. They're killing because they have a right to do so. And they export their violence. They're killing other people. And those other people in their minds are made to be less than human. Therefore, they deserve what they get. In one fell swoop, they're judge and jury and executioner because they are affirming a primordial right that they have to control the world and to exact revenge upon the world when the world just does not do what it is supposed to do, which is to give them maximum or total authority over their lives in that split second. Now, I thought about this yesterday. Why would this young man do something? We would probably never know. He probably himself doesn't understand it. And there's no real way to quantify these things. But we can look at how our society functions. We can look at its operational thought. We can look at the impact of how the society decided to divide itself as part of the whole process of mass control, and then it trickles down to individual control. Parkland the name kind of implies that it's a very bucolic, peaceful community. And it is. At least that's how it started out. Like almost all communities in Florida, and many more across the board in the United States, Parkland was a segregated community. It still is, although people would be hesitating to say that. It segregated itself on the basis of race, on the basis of class, but mostly on the basis of race. It has a lush look, many trees and manicured lawns, and a kind of life that most Americans would wish for. A life free of Negroes. If you happened to be in Parkland and you have had an excuse, an explanation for why you're there, it is because you're there to provide a service to whoever is living there. It's no different than what we call the sundown towns. If you're black or a person of color, excuse me, you could come in because somebody would vouch for you that you have a reason to actually even be walking through Parkland. And you're there to provide a service. And you will observe the implied rule that you'd get lost by sundown and restore the community to its racial wholeness. Now, who were these people living in Parkland? They were not super wealthy people, but they were pretty well off compared to other white people. There were people who moved there to enjoy a kind of life with their own kind. They tended to be people who had covered enough ground in their professional careers to have had some money squirreled away or to avoid having to scrape up a life, like the people they employed to cut their lawns and to bathe their dogs and to see to their children. They imagined themselves to be, nonetheless, a kind of elite group because they had in common the advantage of extra dollars in the bank. They had already achieved a certain amount of financial success via the kind of work that they did. Many of them were executives at companies or did well in business for themselves. But if you stripped all of that away, you would find that Parkland was really a kind of, an anomaly in that working class people created for themselves an upper class community and held to standards that they believed were commensurate with that. I knew a couple of women, white women, living in Parkland. And they would talk about horseback riding, they would talk about croquet, they would talk about the next vacation that they're planning. They would talk about cotillions for their daughters and that kind of thing. Imagining, as they're telling this, that you're getting the message that they're quite well off, when in fact they were just working class people with an upper class veneer. But it worked quite well. They maintained a kind of restrictive covenant in Parkland. They were not particularly loving toward Jews or blacks or Latinos. But then the housing crisis hit. And with that, a lot of people in Parkland began to experience some pressures, financial pressures. Because in the aftermath of the housing crisis, which came right after a succession of hurricanes, people decided that they got to move out and live elsewhere. And then there was also another reality, that the parkland that they wished for, the parkland that they wanted to continue, could not feasibly continue without some kind of elastic added. And that elastic was that they now had to tolerate the inconvenience of having people of color, selectively, highly selective, presence of such people. The bacteria began to infect Parkland. And it came in the form of very well-to-do professionals, people who were still professionals. They're a little bit down on the rung, but they made a lot of money. So you'd find that in parts of Parkland, it was okay to have a Pakistani surgeon or a Jamaican ophthalmologist. You had to have special qualifications just to live there. And that was okay, but not in dramatic amounts, you know, not in a dramatic numbers. That was just not going to happen. So on a highly selective basis, they opened the sluices because they were literally in danger of going defunct as a community, as a white racist community, that they allowed themselves to consider the possibility of having others come among them, but serious qualifications in order for that to happen. And so that's where Parkland is now. It's in, by virtue of the realities that they're facing, they now have to embrace, however unwillingly, the idea of diversity. But still, the people who are allowed in really want in so badly, because the mere presence in Parkland is supposed to make a statement of your financial and your racial accomplishments. So they like the idea of exclusivity. And in a very ironic way, they love the idea that they are in, but others are shut out. That makes them members of a very desirable community, and it adds to their cachet as desirable citizens. But we also have to remember that that entitles them to privileges. And one of the great privileges is good schools. The schools in Parkland are known to be uniformly excellent schools. So those who have money and wish to subject themselves to an extraordinary process of vetting don't mind going through that, because Parkland gives them not only social status, but it also assures them that their children will have access to excellent schools. These schools feed into reputable universities. So these are feeder schools, and all is well, because Parkland has it all. It figured it out. Well, what happens when a young man named Cruz, he looks white, but he isn't. He is adopted by a couple in their later years who are out of touch, not only with how society is going as a whole, but with this matter, this very awkward matter of race. What can they, as white people, relate to this young man and his brother named Cruz? Are they to teach them how to be white? Or can they do the work themselves and see how to kind of relate in some way to this idea, the very clear reality? They have two young boys named Cruz. They have to parent them. So they do the best they can, and they parent them with values that perhaps most people named Cruz would have some difficulty adjusting to, but they grow up in a schizophrenic way. And it is, even now, you can see that that might have been a very, very critical element in the anger that this young man grew up with. Which world did he belong in? And so, just like we saw in the shooting at Sandy Hook, they withdraw. And they devise their own ways of dealing with the world that just doesn't get it about them. I'm not suggesting that this is a good way of thinking, or this is understandable. I'm not suggesting that at all. I'm saying we cannot dismiss it. They grow up in a world that allows them privileges, rights and privileges commensurate with being white in a white world. They're not white in a white world. But when you're white in a white world, you can have guns, as many as you want. Why? The assumption is you can be trusted to make good judgments about that. In the case in Sandy Hook, we had the mother actually buying the guns because she was so sure. Her lovely little son, Adam, by virtue of being white, could exercise good judgment about what you do with guns. Well, he killed her. In this situation in Parkland, this young man has an assault rifle. And according to the sheriff yesterday at the news conference, he said he had multiple units of magazines which means he came prepared to kill a lot. The mother, his adopted mother, clearly knew that he had an assault rifle. She clearly must have noticed things that would normally disturb a parent, she and her husband. But he had guns. He had ammunition. He started shooting at a neighbor's chickens. But nobody found anything extraordinary about that. This was not an alarm going off. This was just a white kid being a white kid in a white community with white values. So no alarms went off. No matter how many clues were given that he was already in a whole other world mentally, and he was rapidly descending. But the thinking in the white world is that it is a mark of accomplishment that you can entrust this level of responsibility to your child. Your child automatically knows how to make sense of the world. You can trust your child to do the right thing. And even when the child does not do the right thing, you could trust that there's a solution called a psychiatrist. Take the child to the psychiatrist. Don't take the guns. Don't get excited about more and more ammunition being stored in your house. But focus instead on making sure he's happy. He's happy. And we have seen this with all of the major actors so far in mass killings. It's about making them happy, whatever it takes to make them happy. We saw that even with the mass killing in Las Vegas. A guy has enough guns to wage a one-man war against a small country, and it doesn't bother you. At least it doesn't bother you to the point where you say and you think to yourself, well, if he's got all these guns, one day something might happen and I would be looking down the barrel of several of these guns. But it's about making him happy. He loves guns. Therefore, I learned to love guns too. And it's a little, you know, a little blip in our relationship. But other than that, I'm okay. I'm okay with everything. There's nothing wrong here. And the guns and the ammunition and the weapons and all of that someday play the role that from the very beginning, these people have in their heads as to what these guns are for. These guns are not part of a constitutional right. They don't even know what the Constitution says. They don't care. They care that they can get guns. Why? Because they intend to kill somebody one day. It's an intention. Because they harbor deep resentments about things, just like Trump. Donald Trump harbors a deep resentment that he's not wealthy. Certainly in the world of wealth, he's not wealthy. He's a pauper. is not of a social class that he needs to belong to be respected. So despite all that bravado, Donald Trump is a very insecure man. He's a working class mentality, masquerading as an upper class person. He feels deficient, as he is. And now everybody can see it. This is a mentality that would explode. And look all around him, all the people around him that he has chosen to function in critical capacities in his administration. What are they? They beat their wives. They do despicable things behind closed doors, as Trump himself does. It doesn't make him a better person simply because he's president of the United States. It's all the more pitiful and all the more reason that we could expect, as we have seen already, an explosive domestic and foreign policy. That's his way of shooting and killing people. I will take half your food stamps. I will let you eat canned food that's no good for you. I will shut down your schools. I'm declaring war, not against poverty, but against the poor, against poor people. He's doing the same thing. I am angry, therefore everybody ought to be angry. Look what they're getting away with. So we have been introduced to these concepts time and again, and we refuse to look at them, despite the fact that they are critical to understanding why people do these things. It is the foundational learning, in a way, that occurs in our society. This is how our society started. People who themselves were rejected in their own countries, coming to a new place, and before they could even put their foot on the soil, they already know what their program will entail. Genocide, mass murder, subjugation of millions of people, the obliteration of people. You come with your Bible, which rests on a canon. So don't think that this is something new. This is an old, primordial, European mindset, which was perhaps the first conditioning, social and political conditioning of people in the United States, white people in the United States. Black people went through a different process, a parallel process. Turn the violence onto yourself, onto your own community. Blow it apart. This way, you achieve, in a very macabre way, equality with your oppressors. You do the same thing they're doing to you, except you now have attained the power to do it yourself. That's right. I can kill a man, as we saw in New York City, with the case of Willie Bosker. I could kill a guy on the subway for $5. I can kill somebody who looks like me for any reason. You look at me the wrong way, I can kill you. I think you have $20 in your pocket. I want it. I can kill you to get it. Even though these values are not by any means the values with which we are raised as a community. But they rationalize it because they equate it with the same thing, which is how do you get power and how do you exercise power? Through violence. You may be surprised that many people committing crimes that are terroristic in nature, they love the idea of seeing their victims just fall to jelly because the gun is aimed at them. They can get them to do anything. It's a macabre sense of power, but it is the primordial kind of power that this country developed on. And they understand it very well, which is why I believe in deconstructing these crimes. The investigators see no aberration here, except in the number of people killed, not in the motivation. But simply in the number, it's just a lot of people, you shouldn't have done it. 17 people is a lot of people to kill at one time. Now you force us to figure out how we're going to go, where we're going to go next with this kind of crime. You see what I'm saying? I'm not suggesting by any means that crimes all have the same dimensions and so forth. But I'm saying when you look at crimes in terms of the kinds of crimes, the grouping, the heading under which they come, you can't help but put these building blocks of thought and analysis into place. And you see how perfectly it fits. It's there. We've been shown this time and again. When this mass shooting occurred in Las Vegas, what did I ask? Is it murder? Was it something else? I asked, is it something else? It is something else. Is this a false flag operation? No, it's something else. And the something else is the mindset that is taught to everyone, but specifically to those who envision themselves as belonging to the power and control group. They can do these things because there is a rationale for it. There's a motivation for it. There's causality for it. So they do the work for you. They figured it out. Your defense eventually could be any one of these things, even after you commit mass murder. Even after the so-called first Americans obliterated everything they saw, took everything they saw, they continue to rationalize it as what was necessary to establish a new world. This is why we celebrate the 4th of July. We don't tell you it's because these folks succeeded in a program not seen on this planet in a trillion years of mass and systematic murder. But they will tell you instead how holy these people were, God-loving people, righteous people. They build a whole narrative around it. When we always would come back to the basic truth. This, too, is one of the essential lessons transmitted from generation to generation about how you exercise power. Killing can be good. You are ridding the earth of the bacteria that's been infecting it. So, these are my thoughts. And there I was yesterday. And the driver clearly lost concentration. Why, he is worried as a father. It's not at the school where his children go, but it is near enough to the school where his children go that he's upset. Wondering whether his children might have been caught up in this craziness. He hasn't heard from his wife. He hasn't heard from his children. He can't concentrate. And I told him, I said, I understand. You should go and take care of them. You should go and do what you feel you need to do to find them and to get your mind at ease. This drama that is playing out, look at how many touchstone points it encompassed, but nobody's talking about it, and they won't. I'll take a little break now. I realized I went longer than I should, but should have. And there won't be too much time today, but we still can take a couple of calls and continue this discussion tomorrow on Free Your Mind Friday. But it bothered me enough to say, let's really understand what we're looking at here. Let's at least for the larger part of society, let's not indulge in these silly and useless and pointless games of trying to tell people there's something else other than what we know we're looking at. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. We could at least get some calls in, you know, for tomorrow, before tomorrow. I look at that in every single instance in which we have had mass shootings. I look at what the psychological aspect could be when you have killings by people of color in this country. Look at what they're saying. Look at what is happening. Look at the underlining motivations. Lincoln from Mount Vernon, you're on the air.
Yeah, hello. How are you?
Okay, how are you?
I'm okay. Sorry, I was trying to get my phone together. I'm okay. I'm persevering always. Hello?
I'm listening.
Yeah, I'm always surprised of people's reaction in America and throughout the world when these things occur. I'm always surprised by everyone, be they black or white, be they Americans or not. We look at things like the brutality of football, the glorification of sports like boxing, where we go to watch a boxing match and we say to the other boxer, kill him, kill him. And we play football and we say, knock him over. And this, I've always looked at this country, and I'm talking about, I look at all the people, people who call themselves intellectuals, and even, you know, or non-intellectuals, and I hear them talk about American history, black, white, pink, or blue. And I hear them refer to things like the founding fathers. I hear even people like Noam Chomsky. And every time I hear him utter that those words, I say, which founding fathers?
But Lincoln, I wanted us to look strictly at this issue today.
This is what I'm talking about.
We're the pinch of time. So mm-hmm. I'm going to have to move on. We'll have more time tomorrow, if it's okay by you. But I've got to move on. There are other people who could at least get a word in edgewise before we close the program today. But Tony from Orlando, you're on the air.
Hello, Detrice. Thanks for taking my call.
Hello. Not at all.
Hi. I just wanted to say that you nailed it right on the head. That's why every time a white male commits a mass shooting like this, nothing ever gets done about it. It's because they have the right to do what they did. If it would have been an illegal alien, we would be screaming, deport all of the illegal aliens. If it would have been, a Muslim immigrant, we would have been invading a country right now because of it. Okay? You nailed it right on the head. You're doing a great job, Eutrice. Keep it up.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Tony. We have to talk about this because the answer is right in front of our eyes. We've been through this kind of experience time and again, and we keep getting the distractions as answers. No, they're not. They're just distractions. When we put things together, this is why I encourage us always to think. Think about it. Don't just react reflexively. Think about what is going on, what we are being presented with. And we see this is more than a horrible crime. It tells us a lot about the mindset of our country, where we are as a nation, and how people in their own ways are executing, pardon the pun, but they're executing their own version of what they have been taught. They're doing it according to their understanding of their rights to do what they're doing, even if it is, you know, so gruesome and so wrong. But it doesn't change the fact that this is real. See, I want to thank you for joining us today. We had just a truncated period to talk. We will continue on Free Your Mind Friday to give more elastic. I'm so sorry, Lincoln, you didn't get to make your point. But we will come back to each other tomorrow and we'll continue the discussion on this and, as usual, on any other topic you choose. Stay tuned. I want also to just remember to tell you to consider supporting PRN.FM with a small contribution or even a large one, but to continue to develop the habit of supporting these kinds of programs that in turn are supporting you. So thanks so much for listening. And we'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.